Welcome to the Calcio FC podcast, your home of Italian football culture. This week, we're going to talk about Scott McTominay and some of the best midfielders in Serie A. But first, joining me, David Farini, in the Destination Calcio studio here in London is the two senior writers, Emmett Gates and Dan Cancian. Good news for Como. They've stayed up. First attempt, the salvezza. The survival, and now we're going to get into the nuts and bolts about how they did it. Dan, I'll throw it to you on the top few performers.
Yeah.
Name a few names who you think have given them.
Well, they've had a few. They've had the likes. I would say you could probably go through a list of like four or five names, which speaks volume to the quality of the squad.
The most prominent?
Nico Paz, I'll say you can't look past him. He's been superb. I will say it's probably been best young player in Serie A this season.
Yeah, and linked to so many clubs. Want him. Everyone wants him.
Yeah.
Real Madrid, I mean, that deal that Como have with him, we'll see if he stays. I mean, they've already come out and said their sporting director, Carl Alberto Ludi, said that he's not going anywhere in the summer. So that's going to be good if they can hold on to him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be good for Como and it's going to be good for Serie A because players like him are rare.
Yeah.
They are rare. He's been superb. Like, just a breath of fresh air, you know, like, great going forward, in between the lines. He's got the sort of the knack of always find a pocket of space, and he always looks like he's got a couple of more seconds on the ball than other players. And it's been a thrill to watch. And then obviously you've got the likes of Patrick Cutrone, you know, the local hero, 7 goals this season.
Big first half of the season for him.
Yeah, 7 goals this season, which is the most he's scored in top flight campaign since his debut at AC Milan. Diao, what a signing has been in January, coming in 8 goals in 15 games before he a serious injury curtailed this season. I think when you look at Diao, you have to make a case for him to be the most impactful signing in January.
Hey, we spoke about that a couple of months ago. Top 5 signings from the January window.
Yeah.
And
Como spent big in January. They spent more than any other club in Serie A.
What was the other club? Was it Roma? No, it was...
AC Milan were close
Milan,
second, yeah.
Again with 48, 49 million. Yeah, both clubs.
But you look at the impact that Milan signings have had, or rather not have had, and you look at the impact that Como signings have had in their season.
Well, I mean, I think the bar is set high for Milan. Obviously, salvation is what Como's objective is. And we've seen the transition from the first half of the season to the second, where when they went bigger in the January window, traditionally, Serie A clubs don't really spend that much in the January window. But look, when you've got the means and you've got the ambition to stay up and you've got, I consider a big plan to sort of be there, ever present in the top flight these days. Some of the other clubs, they can't keep up with clubs that want to spend. So Lecce, the Venezias, and clubs like the Empoli's are not going to be in that same ballpark. And Como, they got the job done.
And it's interesting when you look at it because, for example, like when I compared this win to when Jurgen Klopp took over Liverpool, he had those 6 months of sort of like getting his feet under the table. And then by August, by his first full season, they were ready to go, hitting the ground running. And, you know, it was transformational for the club. And I do wonder whether this second half of the season could have the same effect on Como, because with their signings in January, as you said, they spent big, but they were smart signings. They weren't panic buys,
There weren't any big players there. I mean, there were good players in other leagues.
They were
just steady, good, solid players.
They went for youth.
Yeah.
You know, players with huge potential that they could maybe sell
they
on
bought
in
a plan,
2 or 3
and
years.
Now
there's a project.
They have a much better platform upon which to build. So I do wonder whether they've sort of stolen a march on some of their closest rivals.
I think they have, because when you compare that kind of expenditure to one of the other clubs in the bottom 10 clubs, we'll say even Torino, the big traditional clubs in Italy, are not going to... obviously, they've been set up for decades and they have a youth systems in place. There's an academy project at Como that they've just started up in the last couple of years. Now they've got the women's team. Now they've got the training centre that's first class. They've now, starting to develop the media centre. So all this investment's coming in. And I don't want to say that translates to the field, because it doesn't. It doesn't necessarily, because Palermo City Group is the same project down there. They're in Serie B. They're not really moving in strides the way Como have. But I think it is about that. The transfer windows they've had. And Cesc Fabregas said after the win over Genoa how, to get to this salvation, it took 3 very good transfer windows. And he's obviously talking about January back to the summer and then the January window before that, where it was like, the names like Simone Verdi were coming in. And let's not forget, getting to Serie A, they didn't spend big money to get there. It was, you know, it was paso dopo paso, more or less. It was, let's take it one time, you know, one step at a time. Even, like, I remember seeing an interview with Fabregas talking, I think it's the Sky Sport, one of the English broadcasters, and he was saying how the three-year project is to get to Serie A. And then all of a sudden they're there because they had a very good run of results, shaky end to last Serie B season, and they didn't have to go through the play-off process, which helped them, that win over Cosenza at the end to get there and achieve it with one round to go. Now, Cutrone, 14, 15 goals, Strefezza, players like Da Cunha, you know, these are players that were there, some of them were in Serie C, Gabrieloni there in Serie D, so they still held on to that heritage to get, and Gabrieloni scoring against Roma in Serie A. I mean, that's one of the fairy tale stories for me.
Yeah, scored in every division with Como.
Yeah, so there has been a path there for those that don't know the ascent and how they got there. I don't think that they were expecting to be in Serie A this soon, and then when they got there, they jumped at the chance.
Yeah, they've been smart about it also, because I think a byproduct of them signing so well is that they can sell well, because the likes of Nico Paz and Diao, obviously Como will want to hang on to those players. But as you said, they are attracting interest from the likes of Inter Milan. Bigger clubs are going to come in. And at the moment, you can see the clubs the size of Como, they can build their entire business model on that sort of scenario where we sign players on the cheap, we develop them, and then at some point we sell them on to big clubs for great money. The likes of Brighton are doing, the likes of Brentford are doing it brilliantly in the Premier League. Obviously, you've got a lot of clubs in the sort of mid-range in Italy as well. Yeah. They've done that.
I mean, Atalanta perfected that for years before this recent run.
Udinese before them as well, yeah.
You know, if you're going to come in and invest money into a league, of course you're going to have a look at the success stories and then emulate those.
Yeah.
Not just copy them, but try and emulate them and maybe improve on them, or bring in some of the knowledge that you have. Every club now has their data teams where they go around and they scout for players, or they use software to get the players that they need. And I think that's what Como's done in their summer and January transfer window, because to bring in a player like Kakare, you know, no one saw that coming. I wouldn't have expected any of other Serie A clubs to go for him. And all of a sudden he's in with a club that's struggling in the bottom three. I think overall they spent 6 or 7 weeks in the bottom three. And there was that period where a lot of people on social media were saying they're going straight back down.
Mm.
And of course, when you bring in 4 or 5 solid signings in a January window for reinforcements, because we all know the bottom 6, 7 clubs, if they don't have that depth, that's where they really struggle in March, April, May, especially if you get a couple of injuries. Look at Benabe at Parma.
Mm.
Once they lost him, I mean, poor Pekka. I mean, apart from Jinx, Dan over here.
Yeah, interviewed him, and that was it, the kiss of death.
I'm surprised at what you've gone so far into the episode without mentioning. So thank you. Well, the listeners will appreciate that.
Well, it is my birthday, so I'll be nice on you.
There is that.
Got full reign here. Let's have a look at some of the names that they had in 2023-24 and compare them. Gioacchini didn't play much, unknown from St. Louis City. Then there was Semper, who ended up at Pisa, mm-hmm. and he's going to come up with them. So you got the Como up now with Pisa. Cherry was there, Alberto Cherry. So these are the players that they brought in that January window last year to help them get that promotion. And as we all know, as the official broadcaster of Serie B, that most of the signings are free signings or loan signings.
Or loan signings, yeah.
Or you spend, I think some of them are like 20,000 euros, 100,000 euros. I think the 4 million for Palermo this season for Poyampolo, and that is the big signing of the year. And
clubs in Serie B don't spend money.
No, they operate on a budget, and not out of choice, but out of necessity. And I think that the key thing is that it must be very difficult to manage a club that is trying to get to Serie A or to win promotion from any league, because you need better players than your rivals to win promotion. But the fact that they are better players does not guarantee that they're going to be good enough to keep you up.
Absolutely. Look at Salernitana. Yeah. Look at players. I mean, Parma struggled. We looked at that team. They won Serie B quite easily last season. It doesn't mean you're going to survive Serie A. We all know that. But go on.
Because you do have players, and we've obviously seen them all this season covering Serie B. You do get players that are they're very good for Serie B, but they struggle to adapt to Serie A to make that leap. And so, as Dan said, you do the players that get you up are not necessarily good enough to keep you in Serie A when you get there. So it is important then.
There's a big difference between the pace of Serie A and Serie B and the coaching. Like you'll come up, like Fabregas would have found it very difficult to come up against a lot of those coaches.
He did say that in an interview. That when we interviewed him earlier this season, he did say that it was a completely different world, the step up from Serie B to Serie A. And I think he deserves enormous credit. I think it's actually been interesting to see the shift in dynamic, because Fabregas was one of the story of the season at the beginning of the season, because, you know, obviously phenomenal career as a player. And there he was making his managerial debut in Serie A. I think he's handled it brilliantly, because, as you said, there were times, particularly at the start of the season, where you looked at them and you thought they don't have much about them. They could be going straight down, but he stuck to his principle, his tactical ideas. And it was like, we need time to implement a plan, whatever the plan might be. Yeah. And I think he deserves enormous credit for having, A, the courage of sticking to it, because he could have easily thrown that out of the window and, you know, went a completely different way, but it didn't. The signings obviously helped him. And I think it'd be really, really interesting to see where he goes next season, where he takes an extra step with Como, whether Como take an extra step. Now expectation is going to...
He's a shareholder, pal. Can't see him leaving at this stage.
I don't mean leaving to a different club. Like, I mean, like, where is the next step of this process, of this journey that he's on?
Because I think they've laid foundations. We'll get into that. But just going back behind Emmett here, the birthday boy, the Mola shirt. This is the iconic one from their promotion year. In 2024, when they achieved it. Back then, Fumagalli and Samaya were those January signings. This year, we'll go past the summer window with Belotti and that, because some of those signings didn't work out as well. And that's where they made the decision, the intelligent decision process there, to then go, you know what, these errors occurred, let's correct them with bringing in some other players where we think we need reinforcing at the time. And that's the luxury that they have, obviously, when you have those funds that you can invest, smart signings. When you look at Serie A, we never see this with one of the smaller clubs, where you can come in and do this. So this is kind of like a blueprint for other clubs that want to follow this.
But you also don't see them going, as Emmett said, going turning to youth in January. You normally sign the veteran. People who have been there have done that.
Exactly.
You're not going for Giao, who's 22, 23.
Yeah, I guess their veterans were Pep Reina in the summer.
Yeah.
Belotti is a veteran at 31.
Varane was experienced. Didn't work out, but...
And every club does that in the summer that's coming up from Serie B, because you want that experience to help the youth. But they've gone from Fumagalli and Nsamaeh to attacking options last January to Duvikas from Celta to come up for €13 million, Hassan Diao for €12 million, Maxence Kakare, the French midfielder. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah.
But they've got that depth in the midfield. They had a few injuries. Still, Engelhardt and Dorsena and these other players that came in the summer with Paz. They let Aldero go out to Palermo on loan. They brought in Boutez, some people might know him as. And some of these players were only €1 or 2 million only. I mean, still, it's a luxury, because I don't think Lecce are going to spend it. They'll take the money for selling players to Manchester United, but maybe not reinvest it the same way.
Yeah.
But it's a gamble. It's a risk. And I think you have to mitigate risks when you can. And it's about intelligent signings. Now, where you bring in... And you want to play a system under a progressive coach like Fabregas, I think some of these signings were extremely good, outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, Asana Diao was, as Dan said, he was unbelievable until he got injured. Even Jonathan Iacone, who signed on loan from Fiorentina, I'm a fan of him. He's inconsistent, but when he's on, he's very good. Yeah. And he's been more of an impact sub, but they've made the right signings at the right time.
But again, making that step up from Serie B to Serie A, again, the pace. Sometimes you're a product. Going back to your point where some Serie B players don't come up and make that impact in Serie A, it's because, like McTominay at Napoli, you're a product of who's around you sometimes.
Yeah.
And when you make that step up and some of the other players aren't performing, but then you can reinforce with the likes of Diao, who's going to take two players with him, might make some more room for Cutrone in the middle or Strafetta on the other wing. All of a sudden you've got space, you've got a tilt, whatever it is. You can get between the lines easier because Kakadé is cleaning up balls and all of a sudden Paz has more room. I've seen plays where they've come out on the counter-attack and Paz can have 40 meters to run before he distributes. Like the goal against Genoa was genius, the way that, okay, out to Cutrone on the left wing, the little toe poke through, and Strafetta comes through and picks out the top corner. Those kind of goals, that's where you get that class above to go to the next level. So that's why they've stayed up with four games to go. They've achieved the Salvezza. Let's go to Harry's piece that he's put out on Destination Culture this week. Fabregas's style, he talks about that. He talks about the how he's completely dedicated to the role. Every waking minute he's dialed into the project. And I guess every coach is these days, you have to be. But still, you know, working with the data team to instill that unity, the planning, the style, philosophy that's ingrained, those kind of things. He also mentions how Fabregas is not a, no coach is a fan of defeat, but as a first year coach in Serie A, you'd think that you'd be thinking, you know, well, I'll be happy with 13, 14 defeats. He doesn't take them well, you know, sit in silence on the plane, according to sources on the way back. And he's, you know, he'll just sit there and he wants to make it known he's not happy. He wants the players to feel it as well.
Yeah.
And that is because he's a World Cup champion. And that's what that brings.
That's what I found fascinating about him, because I think often world-class players struggle to become really good managers because they are so used to such high standards, Roy Keane being a prime example. I think he struggled as a manager because the players he was coaching did not live up to his standards, but because his standards were so high. And I think it's been interesting with Fabregas. Obviously, he's played under the likes of Pep, under the likes of Arsene Wenger. He's won the World Cup with Spain. He's won everything there is to win. It must be very difficult for him, with all due respect to common players, to go playing with the likes of, you know, Xavi and Iniesta and Thierry Henry and then translate that as a manager. And, you know, it's one thing to tell them, I want you to do this with the ball. Why do you know that to get them to do it?
And there's a reason why a lot of great players don't make great managers, is because they can see, they have a vision on the pitch that mere mortals can't see.
Yeah.
And they can't, as you said, transfer that to the players. And that's why you've seen even Diego Maradona wasn't a coach, because he could see things that other players can't. And the, I think it shouldn't be forgotten about too, is that Fabregas, what's he, 37, 38? Yeah. Like, Serie A generally, you have to be of a certain vintage to coach in Serie A. He's by far the youngest coach in the league. And the fact to do this well in his first season in Serie A, that shouldn't be taken away either, even though he's got the distinguished career. Yeah. And he's won World Cups and Champions Leagues and European Championships.
Hey, he played Serie B for Como as well. Let's not forget that, pal.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it shouldn't be taken away from the fact that he is still very young in his coaching career.
Yeah, I found him refreshing as well in the way he's been dealing with the media, exactly because of what you're saying, that he's not of the usual vintage that you'll expect Serie A managers to be. He doesn't pull any punches. He doesn't sort of, I don't think he plays the games that the Italian media would like him to play or would like managers to play. You know, when we...
It started to change those games because the Italian media aren't used to the foreign coaches not giving into them like they used to.
No, definitely. But I think he's handled himself really well, you know, when...
He's multilingual.
Yeah.
He goes out there and speaks Italian.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then English.
When Como were under pressure, he, you know, he just didn't cave into the external pressure and the criticism that was coming his way.
It's about self-belief. Yeah. Because if you have that instilled in you, well, I guess when the criticism comes, you just, reflects off you.
And that's the other side of the coin of him being such a, you know, a world-class player, because, you know, you may have people on writing the paper or, you know, radio phoning, putting him under pressure, but he could turn around saying, this is not pressure. Yeah. You know, I've won the World Cup. I've played in teams that have challenged for the league and the Champions League.
So
I know how to handle this.
Yeah, absolutely. So
you can see that he thinks about the game in a different way, because obviously we just mentioned about him being multilingual. I remember he was a BBC pundit for the last World Cup, and they were asking him for his insight on, I can't remember what specific game it was, but he broke it down into various stages, and he was impressed with this, and you could see his attention to detail, especially with the punditry that he was surrounded with. You know, a lot of them are there for the vibes people, but you could see that Fabregas saw the game in a different light and broke it down. And he's like, he was properly analysing whatever game it was that he was there to.
He
be
wasn't
a
there to relive his World Cup glory, like the other players.
He actually offered insight, and I was like, yeah, he's definitely.
I found an incident with him very telling earlier this season. So we went to cover the game against Bologna in Como, and Como conceded two late goals to draw the game 2-2.
From 2-0 up,
From 2-0 up. And the post-match press conference, a local journalist went through a five-minute...
Filibuster,
exactly, for want of a better word.
It's a lecture. It's not a question, it's a lecture.
Yeah, he basically lectured Fabregas about what Como had done wrong and where they'd gone wrong and what he should have done. And Fabregas' response was simply, it wasn't defensive. It was just like, okay, then is there a question coming at the end of this? Or otherwise, I respect your opinion. You'll have your opinion, I'll have mine, you know. And I thought that was telling of his caliber as a manager and as a person as well, because another manager, particularly 37, 38, could have just sort of tried to defend his ideas. He felt like he didn't have to, because, you know, he will do the talking on the pitch. And he made that point that day, like, we're going to be doing our talking on the pitch. And I think that translates onto the players.
Yeah.
The confidence, as you were saying, the self-belief.
He's sure in his conviction. He's sure. Exactly. He doesn't need
to justify himself to the media or to anyone else.
And you can see that in the interview that we've done with him. Harry Slaven spoke to him early in the year. So go and check that out on our YouTube channel, also the DCTV app. Real desire to attract big talents coming this summer. I think that's what he's got. The fire in the belly, the leadership skills on full display this year. And I think now that has set a standard where, you know, to attract even Pep Reina, even though he's early 40s, to get a name like that, or a Varane, a Belotti, you'd have to be signing on to the project because you somewhat believe in that. Now, of course, they're going to be bit part players. Even Sergio Berto, I guess if they didn't make some signings in January, he would have played a little bit more pending injuries. So they did bring in the experience. They may let one or two go. They brought in Dele Alli as well. But, you know, according to other sources, Marcus Rashford was a name that was tabled in the January window. Obviously, he was looking for a new challenge. He was on the outer, so maybe they were going to give him a go. But that is where they want to go. So yeah. That you would never associate the name Rashford. You never hear his name if you were the Lecce sporting director, for example, at their weekly meeting during the transfer window. But this is the ambition that they're showing. Yeah. And I guess it is a reflection of where the ownership group are at. They've taken it from Serie D to Serie A. Now they want to go beyond.
And there was links to Theo Hernandez as well.
Apparently, they allegedly made the bid.
Well, apparently the bid was there. Yeah. And he just simply said no. Yeah. And of course, you know, you're playing Champions League with Milan and you know, the likes of Kyle Walker attracted there.
But the fact that they felt confident enough to even approach Milan about a deal speaks to the ambition.
But also it's a signal to the agents of players. Hey, we're looking for players of this caliber. If they're willing, we'll accept them.
But it's also an interesting sort of paradox, because they've done so well by signing largely, I wouldn't say unknown players, but players that have been sort of flying under the radar for a bit. And I do wonder whether, like, yes, you want to have a sprinkle of stardust, of course, you know, come with the scenery they're in, and, you know, that we've seen, like, you know, celebrities attending games. But I do wonder, like, is the likes of, you know, the likes of Rashford, for example, or the likes of, but maybe Theo Hernandez is a different, a slightly different not an exact comparison, because he plays in Serie A. Do you need to go after those players? Like, how much is too much stardust?
Yeah, there is a discussion to be had that maybe it upsets the dynamic or the balance in the squad if you have players like Nico Paz and Asana Dian. They're young, unpolished diamonds.
Yeah.
But they're still diamonds. Where if you bring in a Theo Hernandez or Marcus Rashford, does it upset the squad dynamic?
I'm not saying that we're going to go down the Galacticos, the bank, but it does.
The Como Galacticos, no? From Fumagalli to Theo Hernandez.
But
maybe.
You could see, I mean, like, even the likes of Dele Alli, I could see why, you know, they're playing without his money there, effectively. But I don't know. I think the Como success is going to be built on, like, signing the likes of Diao and Paz for the future rather than the likes of Rashford.
But that's why I'm so impressed by it, because no one saw the Kakares and the Pazes and Diao's coming. When I saw that Nico Paz was signed, I was thinking, this is great, because I'd seen him at Real Madrid and he scored in the Champions League against Napoli. Of course, he was a 5-minute, 10-minute player here and there, or he'd play in the Coppa, whatever. But still, the talent, that kind of talent being attracted to a newly promoted Italian club, it brings excitement.
Yeah.
And I knew the potential he had. And unless you'd really gone and looked at these young starlets that come off the benches for big clubs, you wouldn't know who he is. Like, most people wouldn't have known who he was. And to go and get Asan Diao, who'd only played, 13, 14 professional games in La Liga, scored a couple of goals this season, and then next thing he's on the plane to Como. To sell a player like that, that's playing at, you know, Betis, scoring against Barcelona, and then to bring him to Como, there has to be a level of convincing. Oh, absolutely. And you speak to their families, you speak to the fathers, you speak to the mothers, you bring over, you know, it's a whole package you need to sell, and there must be belief in this project.
Which is why I think the players with a name like the like of Rashford, the like of Hernandez, if they were to come in, while I'm not quite sure they may disrupt the dynamic, the Como at the minute, but they're going to, I have a feeling they're going to be used as much of a pull for other players. As you said, look, like, you know, if you're thinking like signing for a couple of different clubs and a certain club tells you, look, we've signed Marcus Rashford for Manchester United, this is a statement of intent, then you'll notice, you know, if you know what I mean. So I think that is a sort of twofold.
Yeah. I think they need to continue signing smart, not headline. Say someone like, if they're looking at a new striker for next season, say someone like Moise Keane. You know, still young, scoring the goals for Fiorentina.
Is he achievable?
I mean, if they're talking about Rashford, I don't see, you know, Rashford would cost more
than
wages.
He's in the first year of his contract. That's what I mean by achievable.
Well, he has a 52 million release clause. So if Como want to stomp up, I mean, Theo Hernandez, we're talking 45 million. So it's like, well, you just push another seven out and get it. But what I'm saying is, they need to continue the same smart and not...
Yeah, it's the old adage, you know, you can't start running before you've actually started.
Exactly, that's my point. I want to follow up on that because, for me, I like the model of a Sassuolo. Como's model is good, but the Sassuolo, the Atalanta model, where you build slowly. And for me, like getting another striker in, they've got Duvikas is good. He's scored a couple of goals. But for me, signing smart is going around to some of the smaller clubs, especially the ones that may go down. Yeah. And say, you know what, Caprari, I might take you. Yeah. Kristovic, I might take you. You know, Buzzi or whoever from Venezia.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or you go down to Serie B and you take it one of the best players there, whether it's Ranocchia, who's been phenomenal this season, whether it's Poyampolo, you might want to bring him in.
It's time Yamello got some Serie A action.
Yes, Pietro Yamello.
It's time.
I would take him. I would take him. Yeah. Look, at this point... if Italy squad needs him in June, bring him in. Said he'd be top scorer at this point with Lloriente. Might have taken over on the weekend.
I think he's got 16, Lloriente's got 17. Yeah. But even so, I mean, bring Yamello to... Just bring him in, bring him to Serie A. Get him to play Serie A and Serie B.
He has played before and he scored in Serie A. I think he scored against Inter. Let's go to a few of these final points on Como and Fabregas. The focus away from the pitch obviously is improving as well because... they're investing money in their media center now. They've got Mozzate, their training center. They've improved that. Now they used to train just wherever. They used to find a training field. Sometimes the Sinigalia was it, or you know another field, and that's where Fabregas started. You know, Moreno Longo had those facilities as well when he was coach, and Fabregas took over from him. And in the space of 18 months, he's now achieved the salvation in Serie A. He said that he knew that this was a journey, a real journey, in my opinion, for Fabregas and for Como. And it's been one where I feel like everyone's signed on to that project. It's like a Conte project, isn't it? Where you have to have that belief. And now, having achieved what they've done, they could finish 10th.
Yeah. You know? They've won four games in a row. Yeah. Like, they're finishing the season very strong.
1952 was the last time they'd won three in a row.
Put it this way, you wouldn't want to be Inter going to come on the final day of the season and needing a win.
Yeah.
And that is Inter this season. So I think it's Napoli-Cagliari at the other end.
Yeah. But,
the future ambition, how far can they go in the next 3 years? I mean, they want to build a stadium or redevelop this stadium here.
Well, look, I mean, we were saying this affair, you know, Fabregas said the money doesn't matter. I sort of get why he's saying that, but money does matter.
That's because people will throw daggers and say, well, you got to achieve the Salvezza with four games to go because of how much he spent in the January window. But I think that goes to show for any club that succeeds.
No, sure.
I mean,
you've got to be spending it smartly. The next step for Como is, I will think that if you can finish in the top half next season and then potentially have a crack at the European, get qualified for Europe, maybe the season after that.
Yeah.
There's no reason why Como can't do what Bologna have done this season and make the Coppa Italia final next season.
Yeah. Look, Bologna under Mihailovic 3-4 years ago with the likes of Jerry Shelton and Zvanberg and them, that's where I see this Como project because I watched a lot of Bologna back then and they would go there and win some, lose some, draw some and it was happy-go-lucky, sort of that bottom half of the table. If they come up to 11th or 12th, it's a good season at Bologna and that's where Como's at already.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that they'll do better than what they've done, you know, this season, next season. I'm just saying the project's there.
I think
they're building towards something.
I think much will depend on their summer transfer window and the kind of business they do. You know, as Dan said, I do think a top 10 finish next season is very achievable if they get this transfer window right. They bring, you know, they keep Nico Paz, they keep Diao, they add a couple of more just very good signings, more youngsters that, you know, more unpolished diamonds. And I don't see why a top 10 finish is more than achievable.
Especially when you've got the nucleus of the team now. So you can go and, you know, just say Orsolini wanted to leave Bologna for a new challenge. I think someone like
That goes back to my original point that I made at the top of the show, that, you know, in January they have effectively set themselves up for better and bigger things this summer. You know, they didn't have to sign players just to avoid relegation. They were smart enough to sign players to build a platform, steal a march on their rivals.
Where would you sign someone for? Maybe in the centre of defence? Somewhere?
Maybe another centre back. And I think you'll need.
Because they've done well with the flanks. They brought in Smolcic, they brought in Valle,
I think you need an alternative or a support to Cutrone up front, because I don't think Belotti is going to cut it, to be honest with you.
Well, Belotti, look, he'll be back in the summer, no doubt. It depends what happens to where he wants to go. But Duvikas, Cutrone, you've got Diao, who'll be fit and firing at 20 years of age.
I think it's imperative that they keep Nico Paz.
Yeah.
And I think it would actually be better for his development if he stayed another year.
Yeah, Como, massively.
Because you've seen it so many times over the years. Players of that age, 19, 20, they leave, they go to a big club, they get lost in the shuffle, and then their career just vanishes or declines rapidly. I think for Nico Paz, he should stay at Como. Como will get the best out of him. He knows Fabregas, he knows the system. And at that age, it's better just to stay where you are for another couple of years, then maybe.
Dele Alli. He's got an opportunity in the next 3-4 games to do something.
I mean, if he has a good preseason under his belt, I think that's what Cesc said a while back. It's more he was a signing for next season.
But he's already made his debut. If he didn't get that red card against Milan, he probably would have played more often in between now.
I do think a preseason is crucial for him. You need to get
surely some match time in the last 2-3 games is crucial.
Like when you get a preseason, you get, you know, you get, just the fact of like having a preseason, being around the group, you know, not just being parachuted in as he was with a few months left.
Yeah.
I think some players will build on trust being put into them. And I know that Fabregas has already done that because he made his debut against Milan, of all places, you know, at the Giuseppe Meazza. So we know that he's been given the chance. Of course, maybe you want to go out there and redeem yourself. Surely he's got some hunger in there to go out there and perform well, knowing that he got the red card. Now, he didn't mean to do it, obviously. No player does. They don't want to go out there in their league debut.
Anyway, I mean, that Dele is it's not... It's a gamble, yes, but Como have got nothing to lose with him.
Because they've got to play him before the end of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, give him a couple of games. There's nothing
there
to
lose. There you go, Cesc, birthday boy's giving you advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's finish it up there. Of course, they've got Thierry Henry, more celebrity appearances next season, obviously. So it feels like it's getting that momentum away from the pitch, the whole lure of going to the Lakeside City, you know, the holiday feel when you go there, you know, shoehorn in a bit of football. Lakeside Stadium, beautiful restaurants, and I've seen those plans now. They've got the visual concepts up with restaurants and bars and all that dotted along with the marina there, the lake. So, it looks phenomenal. So we'll see how they go with that. They want that to be finished by 2028. Let's finish up. Is this a blueprint that other clubs can follow in Serie A, Serie B? Serie D even? I mean, obviously, you need a plan, not just money, to get out of Serie D and Serie G, because you can't go spending. No player's going to go to Serie D for you.
You can follow a blueprint, but ultimately, you need to have deep pockets.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and you need an ownership with a good vision.
Yeah. But even if you've got deep pockets, let's look at Redbird, for example. They got deep pockets, not going that well. Is it better to do what Como's done, their ownership group, or what the Milan ownership group has done?
Well, I think I don't think it's a good comparison. I would say you could probably compare it between what Como have done and the likes of Torino have done, for example. They've come up, but now they're sort of stalling. They're there, you know, they're not. You can't see them moving forward. You can't see them moving backwards. Yeah.
They're always 10th, 11th, 12th.
They're always 10th, yeah. So that's the key, I think, with Como is going to be a gradual sort of building up process to success, be it European qualification, be it the odd Coppa Italia run, as well as having like a new ground and everything else? Or is it just a case of we're going to secure Serie A status for the next couple of years and we are not going to show any ambition? So I think the jury is out. I do think the Como are far, far, far better placed than majority of clubs.
Let's talk about Venezia, because they're another destination that is, you know, it's tourist oriented. People love going there. And what Niederauer and that ownership group, maybe where they've failed, they need to look at what Como's done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is maybe a better comparison, because when you make that decision to come in and buy Como, you obviously look at the overall package.
Yeah.
You don't just say, I want to be in Serie D or I want to be in Serie G. Yeah. Because.
But I think going back to the ownership, the American mentality of owning football teams is very different to what's going on in Como. The American mindset is, well, we need profits. Yeah. That's what you're saying with Redbird. You know, if there was a balance sheet Scudetto, Milan would win every year, but it doesn't translate to trophies on the pitch. So I think it's not right to compare Redbird to Como's ownership, because
I'm saying if you were a financial advisor and you were going to, someone came to you with, you know, a set amount of money, would you say go and do what they did or them? You know, where would you be? Because Milan, not sure they're that profitable.
It's difficult because Milan, with Como, you want to establish yourself in Serie A with Milan, you obviously need to challenge for trophies. It's a different dynamic.
It's also about the ability to plan, because I think there's a different goal sheet. Yeah. Let's talk about when you buy Milan.
Would
I
be surprised to see the likes of Como being mentioned in the same bracket as Lazio and Roma in a couple of years? So that sort of couple of steps below
Fiorentina.
I think that's where they're aiming to be.
Yeah.
Well, lots of foreign ownership now. We've spoken about that on previous pods. If you haven't engaged with us, get onto TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and X also. We're always on there. Let's just acknowledge the fact Como have done quite well. Four rounds to go. The Salvezza, the future. We'll see how they go about it, guys. Thanks. One of the hot topics in Serie A is who is the best midfielder. Joining me, David Frini, in the studio, Calcio FC. We've got Destination Calcio senior writers Emmett Gates and Dan Cancian. Welcome, gents. Is there a better midfielder than Scott McTominay? I will just go to Dan's latest article on destinationcalcio.com. The great Scott and Milan's latest Dutch hero, why Scott McTominay and Tijani Reinders are Serie A's best midfielders. Great piece there, Dan. Lovely work. You wrote on Edison last week, Emmett, but we're going to get into just how good Scott McTominay is this season, because the impact he's had. Napoli top of the league, and they look like with four games to go, they might just do it, and it could be who they're calling McTomadonna to get them through for their fourth Italian title. McTominay, he said that he remembers the 2023 side and how great they were, the honour that they brought to the city. Winning the Scudetto, though, would mean the world to him. Chances? And can he get them there?
Well, he's doing his best to get them there.
Can he do any more?
Yeah, individually, like, he's doing as much as any player in the Napoli team.
You wrote that he's scored 5 goals in the past 3 games and has been named man of the match in each of them, 11 goals and 2 assists this season in Serie A. Should we have a look at the SofaScore stats that you put in your piece? Because there's some phenomenal information in there. In the departments of duels won, 6.03. You've got Tijani Reinders, you've compared him to here, is 2.48. So there's a huge difference there. So this is also giving him that edge. You can see the hunger and just how tenacious he is out there.
Yeah, it's been brilliant for Napoli. It is. When we had this conversation this summer, at the moment Antonio Conte signed him, I thought, this is obvious. Like, there has not been, I can't think of a more Antonio Conte player than Scott McTominay. He's got a great engine. He can play in different positions. Obviously, last year at United, he was playing as a defensive midfielder. He himself has been on record since saying that he didn't like to be deployed in that particular role. You know, Nitz Most, Erik ten Hag had to play him there because he had, obviously, Bruno Fernandes ahead of him. But when you look at the way Conte has played him, it makes perfect sense, because he can get into the box, he can crash the box, as they say these days, he can score with his head, he's decent with both feet, and he's tactically very, very diligent. That's one of the things that his managers at United always mentioned that, you know, he always stuck to this, to the task that he was assigned. The problem with McTominay at United was that he was not particularly good at progressing the ball forward in terms of passing. But in Napoli, he doesn't have to do that. You've got the likes of Lobotka, you've got the likes of Anguissa doing that for him.
And he makes those second man runs into the box to help out Lukaku.
Just freed him up. Yeah. I like it. I can't think of another player of his physical build that plays that role like he does.
Yeah.
Because there aren't any. Because you tend to have like a number 10, they tend to be sort of smaller, you know, technically better. You know, with the greatest respect to McTominay, he's not in the category of the likes of, you know, Çalhanoğlu or
Nico Paz.
Or Nico Paz, yeah. But it just fulfills that role to perfection. That's why Conte teams are so methodical and so well structured, because you need certain players in certain roles, and he's one of them.
To keep the machine going, and you can see the effect he's had, because he's not exactly a playmaker, is he, McTominay?
No.
He's more of a player that's just always there. He's omnipresent. And Emmett, what are your thoughts on the great Scott?
He reminds me a lot of Claudio Marchisio in Conte's first season at Juve. Marchisio, I think, had 9-10 goals.
Is that 2010, 2011?
2011, 2012. It was Conte's first season when Juve won the Scudetto against Milan. And Marchisio would break from deep, get on the end of things. And, you know, technically, Marchisio was probably a little bit more technically gifted than McTominay. But that midfielder scoring crucial goals, I think Marchisio got 9 or 10 in that season. Like the similar kind of numbers that McTominay's posted now. And I think, as Dan says, he's not technically brilliant, but he doesn't need to be, because Lobotka can do that. And Guise is the engine up and down. Billy Gilmore can also technically really good. And McTominay is just there, can put a foot in. He's physical, likes to get a tackle in, and he likes to get on the end of things.
He's similar to Anguissa, but they're still different players.
Slightly different skill set, I would say. But I mean, I think...
And Guise is definitely not a box crasher, let's be honest.
No, he's not.
And McTominay, you need a specific level of intelligence to know when to make those runs. And that's
absolutely
the intelligence there. It's not in the feet, it's in the head. It's about getting there.
I think it's crucial. I think when he was signed, a lot of people assumed that Conte will sort of have him sitting next to Lobotka.
Yeah.
But I don't think that Conte ever planned to do that.
You have seen him there at times, but
that's not his game. You know, he's not the sort of player who receives the ball on the half turn. He doesn't quite have the awareness, you know, of the special awareness, and his touch is not as delicate perhaps as he should at times. But when he's been playing where he's played this season, I mean, the results, the numbers speak for themselves. You know, you can't defend against him, also because the fact that he's been effectively given free reigns.
Yeah. I think the glorious thing about Napoli's midfield is they all complement each other because they all bring different characteristics, like we just talked about. And the fact that Conte has freed McTominay up, he's like, right, I want you to get goals. And he's went and he's got him goals, important goals. So I think you could make the case that this Napoli midfield is better than the one that won the Scudetto 2 years ago under Spalletti. Because I just think there's more variance in this three than Lobotka, Anguissa and Zielinski.
Sure. You had more flair in that Napoli team under Spalletti.
I mean, it is a lot more workmanlike team than the one that won the Scudetto 2 years ago. But
they're playing to their strengths.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That's the thing. Like, that's what Antonio Conte does. You know, we discussed this several times this season. He's not there to win style points. He's there to win trophies, and you win trophies in different ways, and he knows how to win trophies. You know, I thought it was telling how when Conte won the league at Chelsea, he struggled badly for the first 2 months, and then he switched to a three-man defence, and that has been his calling card ever since. This season he's done the opposite, because McTominay has allowed him the freedom to tinker with his team, and he's gone from a three-man defence, he then switched to a four-man defence in October against Juventus. And he said himself, it was such a significant change to bring the best out of McTominay that he hasn't looked back since.
Yeah.
And for Conte to, like, people who know him and people who have followed his career, that's a huge, huge statement of intent for him to go from his 3-5-2, which he had implemented at Chelsea. It was more of a 3-4-3 at Chelsea. 3-5-2 was what his Inter was built upon, and he tried to implement that with Italy as well. And now he's gone back to a four-man defence instead, because he feels that McTominay in that role gives me the freedom of, you know, he doesn't need an extra body in midfield. He doesn't need wing back.
It's about versatility for Conte. We're going to name five names altogether for potentially the Serie A midfielder of the season. But before we do that, let's just we'll ground ourselves for a moment and just realize there's four games to go. Napoli in front of Inter by 3 points. By no means is the Scudetto race over.
No.
We're speaking as though Conte might have an inkling of a Scudetto here, but there's a long way to go. Inter, they are good competitors. They've had a bad week, but they will come back. Let's just quickly talk about if McTominay and the likes of Lukaku and Conte do win it, would winning a Scudetto this season take the shine off that one by Osimhen, Kvaratskhelia and Kim Min-jae? Because they had, I mean, they had such a massive impact and the performance of each of those players, they wouldn't have won the Scudetto without them. Yeah. And no one saw it coming.
I don't think so, because A, it was 2 years ago. B, it's a different manager. And three, there are some survivors from the Scudetto team. But
would you take this squad over 2023 squad? Because the Osimhen, 26 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, have a goal scorer like that.
They were more exhilarating to watch under Spalletti. Like, this, as Dan said, Conte, you're not going to win style points at the Style Olympics. You know, he's not going to get a gold medal, but he's made them hard to beat, grinding out results. The spirit of champions. But I don't think it takes the shine off the Scudetto win 2 years ago.
They
won it by so much last time.
Yeah, they won it at a counter.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it's going to take the shine off. If anything, this is maybe even more exhilarating because, you know, 2 years ago, it was a foregone conclusion by what?
March.
February?
Yeah,
but they were 19 March. Points ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. It was which, when they beat Juve 5-1 in Naples.
I remember
over.
That game.
Yeah, it was over.
I remember it well. It
speaks to their dominance, but I don't think anyone expected this season them to be there. Like, they got absolutely annihilated in Verona in the first game of the season, 3-0.
Yeah. They lost to Como as well.
And Antonio Conte's been saying it for the past 9 months. We should not be here. Now, that's obviously mind games because he wants to divert pressure away from Napoli. And I get all that. But when you look at it, I don't think anyone expected. Yes, you expected Napoli to be in the top four after. Yeah, they were dreadful last season. That's the one something. Yeah. Like, I think
they were good in spurts. Let's be honest. In they weren't great. They had three or four coaching changes by the end of the season.
They were good in spurts. The spurts were very few and far between because they were largely horrendous. Yeah. They were statistically the worst defending champion Serie A has ever seen.
Yeah.
They went from winning this.
They were rubbish.
Yeah.
They finished 10th.
Milan were worse. 11th in 99, was it? But anyway, let's get to this. This is a common theme. La Gazzetta dello Sport, Corriere della Sera, whatever it is, he has been on the front page, Scott McTominay, so many times. For those that are listening on the audio pod, you can't see this, but he is all over the newspapers, and this is a common thing where you see the press just simply praising him. How many times has he got an 8 or better from Gazzetta? The man of the match so many times, as you said in your piece. And how will McTominay be remembered if he can get to – he's on 11 Serie A goals at the moment. If he can get to 14, 15 – and drag them over the line, how will he be remembered and who would you correlate him with? Because going back in history, we saw Osimhen, the main goal scorer. Kvaratskhelia got a dozen or so goals, of course. But Osimhen was the leader up forward. So many goals. He was fit for most of the season. And without Osimhen's 26, they wouldn't have won it, let's be honest.
No.
Without McTominay here, I'm not sure they'd have a chance. Maybe even for Champions League, you'd say – you know, take that component out and it'd be a very, very different team.
I struggle to recall, actually. I mean, obviously, Lukaku is still their top scorer in Serie A because he's got 12.
He's 12. Yeah, 12.
But if McTominay to finish as the top scorer in Serie A for Napoli, I can't think of the last team who won the Scudetto with a midfielder as their top scorer. Because I know that McTominay is technically a midfielder. He plays further up the pitch than most midfielders do, but he's technically a midfielder for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. I think you might, like I said earlier, you might have to go back to Juve in Conte's first year. I think Vidal and Marchisio got like 9 or 10 goals apiece.
But they had so many goal scorers.
Yeah.
The Quagliarella days.
Then Matri, they had no out-and-out goal scorer. So the goals were shared around.
But would it be bigger than Osimhen, this performance? Because Osimhen is a striker. He's always in the box. They played the long ball over the top a lot under Spalletti. And he was isolating defenders a lot. Napoli played to his strengths. They got found out eventually because, you know, we all saw at the end of the season where they sort of went off a little bit. They basically had the Scudetto wrapped up with, you know, 8 rounds to go, more or less, mathematical by 5 rounds. But we look at the Champions League back then, they got found out. This time, Conte keeps shaking things up. He's trying to make the opposition guess a little bit more. Spalletti, I don't think, did that. He just played his brand for most of the season and hardly changed it. We saw that's why he got belted by Milan 4-0, and that changed the course of their season. But would it be bigger? McTominay dragging them instead of... Look, when you think about that season, 2023, Osimhen, Kvaratskhelia, Kim Min-jae, of course there were others, but you think of those three. When you think of this, who do you think of? Do you think of Lukaku? Do you think of Di Lorenzo? Do you think of Lobotka?
It's probably more a Conte title.
It's Conte and McTominay.
Than any player aside from McTominay.
Yeah. I do think that you have to give enormous credit to Lukaku, though, because the thing, the reason why McTominay is so effective is because of the hard work that Lukaku puts in. And I think what you're seeing now with Lukaku is, and again, it speaks to Conte's brilliance as a manager. It's the transformation of a player who clearly cannot rely on his strengths anymore, such as like speed.
Yeah.
And it's molded into sort of like, this happens a lot actually in American sports, for example. You know, in the NFL, you may have a quarterback who's very mobile and then he loses the proverbial yard of pace. And then the scheme slightly changes to, it's more tailored to like sort of, We don't need you to do as much as you were doing. We just need you to do slightly different things. Lukaku still has 12 goals. He may probably never score 20 a season as he did at Inter. But you can see the Conte's been using him as like, you know, you can open the space and McTominay can come in and benefit from that. And I think under another manager, I don't think that happens, because another manager probably gets Lukaku in and they're like, okay, I need you to score 20 goals this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he has the most assists in Serie A, Lukaku. And if you had said that to someone at the beginning of the season, they would have been like, you're crazy.
Yeah. So it's a different role he's playing.
Yeah. He's more holding the ball up, bringing McTominay, who's running on.
Yeah.
Like, he's opening up space, dragging defenders away.
And, you know,
he's actually playing further away from goal.
He is. And that's a long-winded way of saying that, as Sam pointed out. I think it is an Antonio Conte Scudetto, if they do win the Scudetto, because I don't think another manager...
No,
Conte at Inter when he had Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez. I guess when you've got the caliber of Martinez up forward, he's going to take players away and he's going to make space for Lukaku.
Which is why Lukaku banged in 20 goals this season. And of course, it was younger, completely different approach. And completely different expectations as well.
Well, the correlation in history to other Napoli midfielders that have done well, everyone thinks of Marek Hamsik because similar kind of performance and output and player. And I think Hamsik was probably a better ball player at ground level, but, and also he's great in the air, very, very good vertical leap as well. And always loved to crash the box, but he wasn't a box crasher. He was a very, very good player, world-class at his very best. And you know, McTominay is showing that he's got that as well. He's in his, mid-20s? He's 26 now?
27, 28.
Oh, he's 28. All right. I was giving you a couple of years off there, Scott. But back when Napoli won the Scudetto, in 2023, the midfield, Anguissa was great, but surely it wasn't a case of thinking of a midfielder that could take them to the brink of something. Of course, they play a role, but even back in 86, 87, they had Salvatore Bagni, but even he only produced a handful of goals, maybe six.
Yeah.
You had...
Fernando Di Napoli. He was more of a hard man.
He didn't score. He didn't score. He was a hard man.
Alemão, I think, scored four goals.
Alemão got four. Massimo Crippa got four in 1989 and 90. And no other midfielder is having that kind of impact that McTominay is. And it's a different brand of football these days, of course. But are there any others that come to mind, even in Serie A in general, that are similar to McTominay?
In terms of goal scoring, you could probably compare him, as far as just the goal scoring is concerned, you know, obviously Marquisio at Juventus, Pogba and Vidal during Conte's era at Juve.
And today it's about Tijani Reinders, and you've written about him.
Yeah.
And that piece, again, I will reiterate, go and read that on destinationcapture.com. And you compare the two in here, 10 goals for Reinders, 11 for McTominay, 4 assists for Reinders, 2 for McTominay. So similar kind of output in terms of goal scoring output, you know, assists and goals together, the involvement. So 13 and 14, Reinders with a slightly better SOFA score rating, 7.28 to 7.23. Yeah. So the discussion has been there. Before McTominay's performance against Torino, where he got two, I guess some people would have given Reinders the edge, but now it's kind of flipped a little bit. And
I think with Reinders is the fact that also he plays for a dysfunctional team. We've been speaking about how good Napoli are on the counter.
But is he looking better because everyone else is not working well there? I suppose
you could look at it that way, but I think if anything, he's looking brilliant despite playing.
Yeah, I think he would look even better if he played in a as Dan said, a functional team. And he's also improved.
Is that what's happening to McTominay? Is he looking better than, because at Manchester United he didn't perform the same
way? Oh, he's absolutely. I mean, I had this conversation at the start of the season with fellow, you know, people who watching, like I do, watch United week in, week out, and a lot of them suggested that McTominay is doing well in Italy because Italy is a poor league compared to the Premier League. But I said to them, I think he's doing well because of coaching, because he's been properly coached instead of just being asked to plug the old gap here and there.
I mean, he's playing under a world-class coach. Let's not, you know, Conte, for all his criticisms and his fiery nature, he is a world-class coach.
He's just a lot of steps above Ten Hag, let's be honest.
And
in the Premier League, you've got a situation where you go out there, it's the highest spending league on the planet. It is the Super League. And you've got so much money that you can just go and spend 80, 90 million on Antony and Casemiro. So you will always put players like McTominay, who are homegrown, to the wayside for a while. And then they might get their chance. He's got the fire in the belly. He's going to go out there and he's going to perform. Did get, what, 6-7 goals last season. But then there came a point where maybe some of their poor decisions in the past caught up with them. They needed to make some money on a homegrown player.
Yeah, they could.
And then they sold him on. And now people in hindsight are looking back and saying, oh, we should have kept McTominay. Well, I don't think you really cared in the summer. If he scored one or two goals at Napoli this season, they'd be saying, thank God we got rid of him. But because he scored 11, oh, I can't believe we let him go for 25 million. I think the power of the hindsight, as you would say, revisionism.
It is revisionism. It is. And as you said, he's been brilliant for Napoli this season, but the McTominay we've seen this season is not the McTominay we saw for United last season. Yeah. I mean,
it's because of who's around him as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the game plan. And also because of, you know, there is no stigma attached to McTominay in Italy. When Ten Hag and Mourinho and Solskjaer before him tried to put McTominay in the role that he's playing now, they were mocked because everyone was like, well, is this where United have come to? Like playing Elias with Scott McTominay as a defensive midfielder and the number 10 role, you know. It's a sad indictment of how bad United have fallen. Obviously, we could have an entire podcast on that. But I just don't
get him started.
It just speaks volume for like how having a fresh start in a different league. And you know what? Fair play to him, because I think a lot of other players would have said, no, I'm actually quite happy to sit on the bench at United, as a lot of them have been.
And the hundreds of thousands, each week. Emmett, any thoughts there? Or
on
McTominay and his spell at Manchester compared to Napoli?
I think it's clearly a case of he's playing under a coach who values him, who's utilising him in his correct position. And I wouldn't say he's built the midfield around McTominay, but he clearly values McTominay and what he brings to Napoli. And he's told him, just go do your thing.
It's about completing the project with McTominay in it. That's when he looked at McTominay. He's like, let's bring him in.
Yeah.
And I guess that was also before the late... Was he one of the late signings?
That was one of the late signings. They already lost to their owner.
We went to the first game of the season and they got smashed.
And you predicted that Napoli would finish where?
Yeah.
They'd be lucky to finish in the top 15.
But then... and then they did bring in...
Oh, it's been waiting to pull it out.
Yeah. But to be fair, that was before they brought in Gilmore, McTominay and there is
30 minutes into the season, pal.
No, but they hadn't signed. But what my point is...
At that stage, you thought Empoli were going to be in the Champions League because they were in the top four.
But my point was...
It's his birthday.
It's his birthday, sorry. I retract that statement.
But my point was, we saw them and they were shocking pre-McTominay signing, pre-Gilmore signing, and he's come in...
I didn't think they were that bad, but yeah.
Come on, they were awful.
Antonio Conte did, because he did say, you know, it wasn't an ultimatum. But
he's a politician. He understands what he needs to say to get what he wants.
Yeah, it was almost like he threw the game so he could make a point to De Laurentiis, go and buy me players.
Look, if you look at those goals in that game, some of the goals, two of them especially, were very lucky.
I guess.
Especially the third one, they just went straight down the middle.
You could make a case of Napoli were shocking, they needed signings. Would have anyone expected McTominay to beat that signing?
Well, I think
the player that's bringing them towards a fourth title.
Back then they had Kvaratskhelia, let's not forget. True. So still they had a very good team. And even though they had a poor season under Mazzarri and Rudy Garcia and so on, let's put things into perspective. They're still a world-class team. They just had a bad season. It's like Inter had a bad week, but Napoli took that into a whole season.
Yeah.
And when you look at
things... They were a world-class team, but they did not have a world-class manager, because Rudy Garcia is not a world-class manager. Neither is Walter Mazzarri.
He's not the cousin of a world-class manager.
If Conte lost his first three games, It'd be a very different narrative that we're speaking about right now. We'd be saying, well, Napoli have had two bad seasons in a row and maybe they let Conte go 2 months ago. Mm. It could have ended up quite like that. But obviously Conte has a plan and a project, and he wouldn't have come in and agreed to do this with ADL if he wasn't allowed to have his way. They will be making, or they already are making, haggis pizzas in Naples right now. They're making cakes, Lukaku as well. We're seeing those floating around the internet. But the other candidates for the Bulgarelli number 8 award, the midfielder of the season in Serie A, might be some Dutch smokies for Reinders.
I'm a big fan of Reinders. Yeah. He's improved exponentially compared to last season. Like when Milan went to Saudi Arabia for the Italian Super Cup in January, Stefano Pioli come to visit, you know, Milan's training camp, and I think he pulled Reinders aside and he kind of joked with him and he said, last season with me, you always shot wide and now you're scoring goals. Yeah. I think he's got 15 in all competitions. He's one of the highest scoring midfielders in Europe. And last season he was making the runs, just the end product wasn't there. Now the end product is there. And as Dan said, if you put Reinders into this Napoli team with Conte as manager, I think he would do a whole lot better.
Sure. I mean, the best performing midfielder from any club is always going to slot into another club quite well.
But I think the point is that he's performing in spite of what's going on around him.
Yeah. Can you name another couple of midfielders? We've already got McTominay here. We've got Reinders. Obviously, they're the front runners for the midfielder of the year, possibly even the Serie A player of the year, depending on how Napoli
goes. You can't look past Nicola Barella. Inter Milan is superb. And in fact, I mean...
if we had this conversation 2 months ago, we would have said Barella probably first.
I think you can... I think if anything, Inter having such a bad week is only strengthened his case. He's the one player, as well as Thuram prone, that he cannot do without. And I think he's been asked to do too much this season. Particularly over the past couple of weeks, Inter cannot score goals. You know, you take Thuram out of the team and it's Martinez will bust because Taremi, let's be honest, has looked like a competition winner at times.
Yeah, and Arnautovic, the less said, the better.
Yeah, and Aslani midfield, you know, is taken over from Çalhanoğlu, but Çalhanoğlu brings the best out of Barella, and I feel Barella brings the best out of Çalhanoğlu. They combine themselves so well, and Barella is a wonderful, wonderful player. I do think that Inter Milan are going to be looking at bringing someone in the summer, regardless whether they win the double.
Yeah, they want Nico Paz, don't they?
Scudetto, the Champions League. Yeah. But you can see why. Inzaghi is probably the best squad there is in Serie A, except that he doesn't have a replacement for either Çalhanoğlu, Barella, nor for Thuram, and that's what it's going to cost them.
Didums.
Yeah.
Emmett, who do you think could be a rival to those two?
To
the three.
If he's a rival as such, but I'm a big fan of Ederson of Atlanta. Phenomenal. I wrote a piece on Destination Calcio last week about Ederson, and I think when Atalanta won the Europa League last year, a lot of the focus was on Ademola Lookman and Koop Meiners. And I think Koop Meiners benefited from having Ederson beside him in midfield. And Koop Meiners, because he scored, I think, was 12 Serie A goals last season, he took a lot of the credit. But it was actually Ederson did a lot of the legwork. You know, he's dynamic, he gets up and down. He doesn't score a lot of goals. He's got 4 this season. But he does a lot of the grunt work, which then allows Koop Meiners to shine. And the reason why Juve bought him and his subsequent struggles at Juve was A, he was being played out of position by Thiago Motta, but B, he didn't have someone like Ederson beside him to go up and down, who's dynamic, who can win the ball, who can pass to Koop Meiners. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Ederson. You know, he's only been there for, this is his second season, third season?
After Salernitana, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Salernitana and he signed for like 23 million. Atlanta would easily get 50, 60 million for him now. So I'm a big fan of
him. I think it's not a coincidence that the moment he sort of went off the boil a bit, that's when Atalanta's total title went up in smoke, and title bid rather, went up in smoke. He's brilliant. I agree with him. I think there was a case until maybe February, he was probably the best player in Serie A. I think he was absolutely superb.
Yeah. Yeah, and he scored a brilliant goal against Milan at San Siro a couple of 2 weekends ago, a diving header. Like, it was vintage Gasperini.
Yeah, he's one of those midfielders that likes to get in the box. He wasn't able to showcase exactly what it is made of at Salernitana. But I'm going to surprise you both. I've got the fifth pick here, and I'm going to go with someone from this club here, Lazio. played a blinder in this game. In
Nicolò Rovella, is it?
No, I'm going to go with Mattia Guendouzi, who's been fabulous, the French midfielder for Lazio this season. The way he gets around the pitch, he runs things. It's not just Rovella. As a tandem, they're kind of doing the Lobotka-ish, and I don't want to say McTominay, but maybe an Anguissa, Lobotka-Anguissa act there for Marco Baroni, and he has been phenomenal this season. 33 games already this season out of 34, 33 last season. When he scores, Lazio win. That means they've won three games because he's scored three times, and two of those against Torino. But yeah, he's been phenomenal, and I think he's been a really good buy for them. And if you ask any Lazio supporter, I guarantee he's at the top of the list, whereas maybe El Cid Hazai at the bottom. So
yeah,
they've had a few standout performers this year, but for me, Guendouzi has been their best midfielder and one of Serie A's best.
Mm. I also do another shout out for Lobotka. I love watching Lobotka play football. Just on the half turn, he gets the ball, he twists either way. He reminds me of a little Iniesta, just the way he glides across the pitch. Beautiful player to watch.
Yeah. Honourable mention to my pick for an Italy call-up, Rolando Mandragora. But I think we'll leave it there, guys. The best midfielders in Serie A. Our top five picks, of course. Maybe McTominay's the front runner at the moment. Tijani Reinders. We've got Barella, Nicolò Barella in third here, or Edison?
We'll go
Barella, then Edison, then Guendouzi, my pick for Lazio. So a bit of representation across the board. Get involved if you agree with us, or even if you disagree, we'll accept your negative feedback, of course, on Instagram.
Feedback welcome.
This is a democracy, not. Comments are always a democracy, so yes. Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and X, of course, in the YouTube comments as well.